This is Xenos Alchemist, a modern synthesis podcast. I'm Mr. Pink, and I'm joined today by my brother, Brother Pink. Today we're going to be talking about Games Workshop's Inner Circle competition, and catching you up if you were wondering what this Inner Circle thing is all about, and kind of running down what happened this past weekend in Dallas for the five Inner Circle champions. And the goal is just to kind of report on the event while also letting everyone know what Inner Circle is all about. Because it was a really cool contest, but you might not have caught wind of it unless you were in a Games Workshop or you were following the Inner Circle Facebook group. Okay? So without further ado, welcome to Xenos Alchemist.
So, Mr. Pink, what is the Inner Circle?
Okay, so Inner Circle, to go back to February, Games Workshop created a contest. This was North America only. It's primarily a modeling and painting contest to encourage people to kind of get started on a new army for new 40K. However,
was Mexico included?
I don't know if Mexico was included. I don't think so. I know that America was included, United States was included, Canada was included, but there were certain places that couldn't participate, unfortunately, in the grand prize at the end of the contest. Places like, I think, Colorado and Quebec.
Because of local laws around contests.
Yeah. But the whole idea behind Inner Circle was that you had to create, you didn't have to, but you were encouraged to create a new army, create new models, build them and paint them and create a display board for them all in the time period of something around February 11th or 13th until final judging on the second weekend in May. I can't remember what it was. I think it was the 14th. So it was primarily a painting and modeling contest like Armies on Parade. However, where it differed from Armies on Parade is that Armies on Parade is people come in and they vote for your army. This was scored on a rubric that Games Workshop HQ in Dallas created, and it was judged by store managers at each of the Games Workshop stores across North America.
So what was the prize for Inner Circle?
So the prize at the local level, in your local Games Workshop store, you could win either a bronze, silver, or gold medal and a nice, they're really cool medals that Games Workshop had custom made for the event, and a nice certificate to go with it. And then whoever won gold in their local store was entered into a final competition where there's about 100 stores in North America that produced gold winning entries. All of those 100 armies were entered into a pool that were then, photos of them were sent to Games Workshop headquarters in Dallas, and then they were further judged using a different rubric that was unique to the Dallas headquarters. And from those 100 armies, they picked 15 finalists, and from those 15 finalists, they picked five winners overall. And I just happened to be the winner for Canada.
So the rubric they were using that you got to see that you worked by, can you pick out some of the rules that you kind of that guided your work on it?
Certainly. So the rubric was really useful because it could kind of help you make decisions on how you were going to build your army. For example, you got extra points for any unit that was over 10 models. You got extra points for models that were fully built and painted during the Inner Circle competition to encourage people to make new models rather than just dust off the army they've been using for years. Other things you were scored on, you needed to have your models fully based. You get extra points for conversions or extreme conversions, sculpting, stuff like that. You were also graded based on the painting techniques that you used. So if you just dry brush, that was like kind of one level. But if you stepped it up and you did edge highlighting and full blending, then you got even more. And then there was additional points awarded for kind of exceptional painting. I guess like if you did object source lighting and got all your lenses painted and all your little details and doodads, then you would get still more points for that.
Were there any things that were like not permitted that were against, not against the rules, but like they were kind of like, oh, you did that?
Well, you weren't allowed to use any third-party models or any third-party conversion pieces.
Bases
no. as well, yeah. There are some entries that were disqualified because they used third-party bases. So you couldn't use third-party bases either. It had to be pure Games Workshop stuff. And that was explained to us that it was for legal reasons because people have gotten third-party models into competitions before, and then they've kind of, Games Workshop has heard from the other companies that produce those models, and they've been kind of pissed off or something.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, like if it's another miniature game, it's like, what the fuck? I don't want. Yeah, okay. Sorry. the prize. What was the prize?
So the grand prize, the five people who were selected as best overall, one person was selected in each of five divisions across the United States and Canada. Canada was one big division, and then the United States was split up into four divisions. I'm not sure what those divisions actually were, but the final winners came from Seattle, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and New York. So maybe someone who's more familiar with America can figure out how those break down. And the final grand prize was that those five people were going to be flown to Dallas to visit Games Workshop North American HQ in Dallas, all expenses paid. So we got plane tickets down, got a couple of meals, and a whole day of festivities.
So how much time did you actually spend in Dallas?
In Dallas, so I flew down on the... Sorry?
Go. So.
I flew down on the Friday. Actually, all the winners flew down on the Friday afternoon or evening.
What time did you leave on Friday?
So I left Toronto at about 12:45 on Friday, and I was scheduled to arrive in Dallas at 3 p.m. But fun story, there was a giant, huge, crazy thunderstorm over Dallas, so a bunch of our flights got messed up. And I didn't wind up arriving in Dallas until 9:45 at night through a very circuitous route through Austin and with a really amazing Texan driver who got me there to Dallas from Austin.
Okay, so you flew from Friday around noon. That's when your kind of trip started.
Yeah.
You got there Friday evening late.
Yeah.
And then it was basically all Saturday day, and then you left on Saturday or you left on Sunday?
I left on Saturday, so it was pretty much like a 24-hour whirlwind thing. My flight was scheduled to go out at 7:30 on Saturday night, but because there is so many backups and screw-ups because of the thunderstorms in Dallas on Friday night, I didn't actually get out on Saturday until about 9:40, but there were people on my flight who had been scheduled to leave Dallas at 6:50 a.m. and weren't getting out of there till 9:40 p.m., so I didn't have anything to complain about. It was much smoother getting out than getting in.
The whole time you were in Dallas, was it like crazy bad weather, or it cleared up by the time you got there?
Friday night was pretty bad. Saturday morning was rainy. And then by Saturday afternoon, we were introduced to Dallas weather, which was hot as balls. Like crazy peak of Toronto summer.
I have a question. I saw your suitcase. Leopard print. Very interesting, Mr. Pink.
My Norn Queen was convinced that I was going to get rolled for that, that I couldn't show up in Texas with a leopard print suitcase.
But it's just a little... Is it yours?
It's mine, yeah. I picked it up in England for cheap at a Oxfam because I was touring around Scotland and needed more space for scotch. So I bought this thing used, and it saved my life because I usually check luggage, but because of all the airplane screw-ups, and this time I went only carry-on with that weird little leopard print bag. So I was able to just jump off the plane and run as soon as I got to Austin and get in the car and then head to Dallas. It was a good call. And I was able to fit my miniature case inside of it. So that was key.
Nice. A leopard print suitcase like that is actually pretty smart because, like, if anything happens, you can see where your suitcase is.
It's also the case that no one wants to steal a leopard print bag.
Exactly. Like, what's going to be in that shitty-looking bag? Like, 60 vibrators? No, thank you.
Whole box of dicks.
That guy's got a box of dicks in there, I can tell. Cool. Okay. Do you want to like go quickly over what happened, the schedule? Like you on the Saturday schedule.
Sure. So okay. Saturday was like the big kind of celebration day where the Games Workshop staff, a whole pile of Games Workshop Dallas HQ staff showed up on a Saturday to hang out with us losers. I'm going to miss somebody. Magic Monica Newman, who took amazing care of us the whole weekend. There was Travis, who's, I think, their head of recruiting. He's like the nicest dude. He's worked for Games Workshop for 13 years. There was Don, the super talented artist who we didn't know about until he surprised us with sketches. There was Josh. Oh God, what's Josh? Wembley or something like that. Josh is the head of Games Workshop US. So it was pretty amazing to meet him. There was the amazing Desiree Dorsey, I think is her name. They call her Desi. She's phenomenal. She's this little tiny woman who's been running our plastic crack for 18 years. I think she handles like all their, I'm going to get this wrong, facilities and like logistics and stuff. Nicest lady. So she was there. We had Pete, I think it's Pete Underwood. I keep forgetting his last name. Peter, he was the hobby master, so he was there with us. Land, he was
the
later.
Is he the older guy who ran the games?
No, that's Don. Okay. Don ran the games. And Travis. Okay. Don and Travis ran the games. So Pete was playing with me. He's playing Gene Stealer Cult alongside my Gene Stealer Cult and Chris's Orcs. And then there was, I think his name was Len. Len is their one of their recruiters, I believe. And he was doing a lot of, like, taking photos and, like, filming stuff while we were there and filmed our interviews. So that was seven people. And then later on, fortunately, James Bell showed up, who was another one of the main people who ran the Inner Circle competition. It was wicked to meet him because I'd heard a lot of great things about him. And he was actually the one who painted my Space Marine, but we'll get into that in a second. So I think there was eight staff members there.
Did you mention Josh?
I mentioned Josh at the beginning. He's the head of Games Workshop North America.
Cool. Okay.
And he was kind of our master of ceremony. So good thing you mentioned Josh, because the first thing we started off with, we got up on Saturday morning, had breakfast at the hotel. Travis came and picked us up in this crazy-ass Suburban or something, and we crammed in there like Space Marines in a Rhino. It was crazy. Nice. Me and Chris were in the back. We had our knees up around our chins. But we made it to Games Workshop HQ, which is a kind of like unassuming office from the outside. But once you get in, it's just filled with dorkery, all kinds of amazing posters on the walls. All of their meeting rooms are named after different places from 40K and fantasy. So it started off with Josh giving us a tour of the office, and then he did a Q&A with us where he told us that he could answer any question we asked him about Games Workshop. He could answer it. Maybe he wasn't going to, but he could. That was like his line. So it was pretty cool. We got to ask him a pile of questions, and he kind of gave us a little bit of a glimpse, like, of the inside of the running of the company and their decisions about stuff and kind of what's in store for us over the next few years.
I have a question for you. You got to tour around the office and stuff. Like, when I think of, like, cool places to work, there's cool stuff on the desks. Was there, like, cool stuff on the desk specifically you can describe, or, like, cool things on the wall?
Oh, there was cool stuff on the desks. Like, we're not dealing with the studio here, so there wasn't, like, in-progress models on the desks. But
No, but, like...
A lot of the staff had Games Workshop models on their desks, just, like, their own projects. Some of the guys had cool kind of trophies that they'd won. There was this Bloodthirster that tours around the office, and it's like the Rude Award or something. So if someone's being rude, they award them the Bloodthirster. And like, it's kind of like a, I don't know,
something to tell a morale them, you know, thing.
Yeah, a morale thing. But yeah, there was a lot of cool models. There's some like cool toys on desks, that kind of stuff. The walls were all Games Workshop posters. There was like a giant Maggoty Calamari, Marnius Calgar poster right inside the door. A bunch of just other cool art in all the different rooms. They had one of my favorite pieces of art, which is it Asmodai? Is he the...
oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Chief Interrogator?
Chief Interrogator for the Dark Angels. That was in their, like, couch room. He was right on the wall.
That big purple one from the 1997 catalog?
Yes, yes, exactly, that one. Yeah, and then the other cool thing is that... So they toured us through the office, and then where we wound up was their training room. So they do a lot of training out of Dallas, and they have this kind of funky... It's like a mocked-up Games Workshop. So it's got kind of the hobby tables. It's got the gaming tables. It's got, like, walls that are supposed to represent product. It's got the cash register, and that's where they train people. And then we just hung out in there for the rest of the day.
Yo, you think your buddy Mike at Toronto GW went to Dallas for training?
Yeah, yeah. Mike goes there every, like, couple of months. They have all their managers down to do, like, a training. So, yeah, definitely. He's told us about that. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. They brought you to the training room.
They brought us to the training room, and that's where Josh gave us the opportunity to kind of like ask him questions. And he told us a lot of stuff that I can't really talk about, but I think one thing that I can mention is that we kind of asked him, like, this is cool. We've all seen new 40K now. We're all pretty excited about it. We've all seen new Primaris. We're all pretty excited about it. But what is coming for 40K? Like, how could they possibly keep this up? And he basically said, like, look at what happened for Age of Sigmar. Like, look at what happened leading up to when Age of Sigmar happened, and look at the models that came out of that, how it just cranked the level of amazing detail, amazing models up to, like, 300 for fantasy. He said that's coming for 40K.
Then you guys moved to the...
Yep, so we did a ceremony where he presented each of us with a really sexy plaque, marble-backed plaque, to celebrate us as being a champion, A lot of people have asked me if, like, I won in Dallas, like, that there was going to be some final knife fight between the
five. There was nothing. There was nothing to do, right?
To be clear, yeah, we had all won. All five of us were winners. That we were all five champions. There wasn't like one champion overall.
But there wasn't one guy who gets the blowjob for coming in first.
No, exactly. There's no blowjobs to be had. So we all got these really, really sweet plaques that had actual purity seals on them that they had, like, created, and they were stuck onto these plaques. They gave us these sweet shirts. They're like Dickies work shirts that look like bowling shirts that each had our name embroidered on them, and then the inner circle patches on them, which was amazing and very surprising. And then, so they handed us those things, and there was this conspicuous black tablecloth over the table with these five conspicuous large lumps underneath it. So once they had given us all our prizes, they're like, well, we're not going to let you go away empty-handed. Josh whipped the tablecloth off the table, and there were five, Dark Imperium boxes there, and five index books for our various factions. So they were like, these are yours, which was friggin' amazing. I thought they might do something like that, but I was really excited when they actually did.
It sucks when you kind of get that inkling and you're like, you create expectation for yourself, and like, there's no reason for you to have that expectation. No one told you to have that expectation. Like, you kind of gave me the inkling too, and I wanted to start talking to you like, oh, that box set you might get. But I was like, fuck, I shouldn't talk to him at all. I shouldn't talk to Mr. Pink. I shouldn't put any ideas in his head. I shouldn't have any ideas. He shouldn't have any ideas. Just going to Dallas is prize enough.
Yeah, but, and there was a situation when, like, I was on the plane going down there, and in the run-up to Inner Circle, Abe Petraka, one of the crazy dudes who wasn't there this weekend but who had met previously, he did this video where he said that he outlined all the stuff that they were going to give the winners for Inner Circle, and then at the end he said, and we're going to give you some other secret stuff that we can't talk about. So when he said that, I got really excited, and I was like, oh my God, maybe it's going to be like new Warhammer and all this stuff. But then in the weeks leading up to Inner Circle, Games Workshop has leaked a lot of, well, not leaked, they've shared a lot of information about the new edition, which is phenomenal. And then most recently, a buttload of leaks have come out on the internet where you can basically find all the rules from all the annexes taken on shitty Russian potato phones. But after all that stuff, I kind of got I became a bit of an asshole. I, like, thought about how, okay, I'd won this trip to Dallas, and that's pretty cool, but, like, how much can they really show us? Because all this stuff has already been released. All this stuff has already been leaked. And, like, how good is it really going to be? And, like, oh, yeah, it's not going to be that special. And I had a moment on the plane where I was reflecting on this, and I just kind of called myself on being an asshole. I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like, you're going to Dallas. You're going to, like, Games Workshop HQ. You're getting flown down there. You're getting treated like a hell damn ass king, because they definitely treated us like hell damn ass kings. Like, it's definitely enough. Whether they give you a new 40K box or not, it's enough. Like, it's more than enough. One thing that Josh mentioned when he was talking to us about this is that they have never... I think he said that there's been things kind of like this, but Games Workshop has never given away a grand prize on this scale before. Like, they've never flown five people to their headquarters.
It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Except for nobody had to die.
Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, you didn't get a golden ticket, but you worked for your fucking golden ticket. You made an army. And then the five of you guys get flown out there. You unfortunately don't get to bring anybody, because Uncle, who hasn't gotten out of the bed in 10 years, he would love to have gone to see GW.
And it really was the case that the experience was the reward. Like, this was phenomenal. The staff were so kind. They took such good care of us. Like, when I was driving from Austin to Dallas on Friday night, I'm like, who the hell am I to deserve this crap? And my driver was kind of like, who the hell are you? These people must really like you. And I'm like, I guess they do. And the other realization I came to is that another thing that Josh mentioned a lot is that we should be proud of ourselves, because we're like the top five of up to 800 participants. That was their estimate of how many, I don't know if it was an estimate or it was the actual number, because there's roughly 100 Games Workshops in North America, maybe like 110. And they were averaging 8 armies entered at each Games Workshop for the Inner Circle. So that's 800 people. And we're like the top five for 800 people. So Josh kept stressing that, like, this is a huge accomplishment. And the other thing that I came to on myself when I was kind of like faulting myself for being an asshole was that those 800 people probably put in a shitload of work. And even if just, like, the people who got gold medals put in a shitload of work, that's 100 people who put in a shitload of work. And thinking about how much time I put into my army and how frustrated I would have been if I put in all that work and didn't have anything to show for it, it kind of took me back to when I had entered my first Golden Demon. I'd brought my Carnifex. I'd put so much work into it. I'd sculpted for the first time ever. And I did a pretty good job. And I brought it in and I put it down. And then I just, like, stepped back for a second and looked at all the other entries. And I was like, holy shit, what have I gotten myself into? Because I'd never done Golden Demon before. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know the level of competition. And I felt like I had slammed into a brick wall. I wasn't that crestfallen, but I was kind of like, Jesus, like, what am I doing here? I don't deserve to be here. I can't compete with this. So now I've, like, been doing this hobby for, like, God, almost 2 decades, and I've gotten myself to a level where, like, I'm really proud of it, and I put in a shitload of work, and it paid off. But, like, right now I'm standing on top of that brick wall, and I'm looking down at people who are slamming into it and being like, what the crap? And it's not my style to be a dick and be like, oh, yeah, whatever, fuck you. Like, I like encouraging people, and I like getting people up to, like, higher levels and showing them what they can do. So, yeah, it kind of, like, checked myself, and I don't know, I was glad I did it, because it made me appreciate this all the more, especially when there was a giant thunderstorm. It's like, oh, you're being a dick about going to Dallas? Guess what? You don't get to go to Dallas. I'm like, no, I really want to go to Dallas, I promise.
You got
to
think that there's 95 people who all came in first place that didn't get to come, right? And the only thing that separates you from them is somebody got to see a photo of their army in Dallas, and they were like, okay, I'm judging it on this huge list of criteria.
You're right. It must have been really, really friggin' hard for the staff.
That doesn't really raise you above them in any way.
Yeah, and it must have been so, like, on your point, it must have been so phenomenally hard for the guys in Dallas to judge the stuff, because who knows what kind of photos they got of these armies.
Exactly.
Like, it could have been, like, potato cam photos. They might have had no idea. And it could be that there's some people out there who are feeling pretty salty because the photos that got sent into their army didn't do it justice. Because photos never do armies justice.
Yeah, that's the hard, I think that's, like, the one ignored part of this hobby beyond everything is taking a photo.
Yeah, well, Games Workshop did that amazing thing on the community page where they told you how to take pictures of models, and it's a really good tip sheet. And if anyone is frustrated by taking pictures of models and hasn't looked at that, you got to go on the Games Workshop community page, a Warhammer community page, and look it up.
The guy at your Games Workshop is Mike, right?
Yeah.
Is he okay at taking photos?
Oh, dude, I took all the photos.
But you should step in and be like, hey, give him, like, a few pointers, and you get, like, if the store had its own light box, it was like, hey, come to the store, Michael, take a picture.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a really good idea. I've given him, like, a couple of tips, but it's so dark in our Games Workshop, like, so dark. So I brought lights.
So you guys got the boxes, and then they also gave you something that I hadn't seen before, which was a singular...
Oh, sorry, yes. Yeah, so what happened was, you're right, as they were presenting us with our plaques and our shirts, they also gave us our own Primaris Space Marine, and the whole thing was like, they're like, we want to give you your first Primaris Space Marine. And before we had arrived, they had asked us all these cryptic questions, like, give us your shirt size, what do you like to drink? And then one of them was, what? Pick a loyalist chapter of Space Marines, or original founding loyalist chapter, your favorite chapter. And I'm like, you know, I play Xenos, right?
And you picked Blood Angels, right?
I actually did. I said, well, I don't really care about Space Marines that much, but my brother plays Blood Angels, so, like, Blood Angels or Dark Angels. And it wound up that they made me a Dark Angel, which is pretty cool, because I do think Dark Angels are kind of cool. And so they made 5 models, and we got to request our chapters, and each of these Primaris Space Marines was painted by one of the staff members at HQ, specifically for each of us. So that was really sweet. So I got this Dark Angel that was painted by James Bell, who's one of the main guys who ran Inner Circle. But yeah, in addition to that, they let us, during the hobby time later, they let us mess around with these Primaris Space Marines. They're like monopose snap fit, I guess, ish, but they're beautiful. Like, they're amazing.
But the one they gave you, it's not from the starter box, right?
No. So it's people, like, I posted a shot of it online because people were asking. I posted a picture of the 5 Primaris Space Marines they made for us, and people were like, oh, are those monopose? Like, where are those? What are those? So they had given us the sprues. I just posted a picture of the sprue, and it's like a small sprue, very similar to the kind of sprue that you saw that came out with the White Dwarf when the Stormcast Eternals were launched.
Right.
We were told that these sprues are for, like, beginner painters. Yep. Kind of like when you go into Games Workshop, your first free model, here's a Stormcast put it together, paint it up, that these are going to be used like that for Primaris Space Marines. But people have postulated that they might be attached to White Dwarfs. So I don't know. No one at headquarters told us that. It's just people on the internet are being like, that looks like it could be on a White Dwarf.
The one thing I'm also thinking about is, like, right now, everything is set to release on the 17th or the 18th, right?
17th.
I've heard that a lot of people have difficulties getting the White Dwarf at the beginning of the month. I'm wondering if now it's going
to
be...
It's been pushed back. It's been officially pushed back. Okay. The White Dwarf launch date has been pushed back to the 17th. And some people have cited that as proof that they're going to put a Primaris Space Marine on the front of it. But the cool thing is that from seeing the sprue, first of all, it has a base that it comes with. And it's, like, super detailed. And it looks amazing, the base. Like, when they handed us our painted Marines, we looked at the bases and we're like, what are these bases? Is this a new basing kit that's coming out? And they were like, I don't know. And they were all, like, Dr. Evil about it and very sketchy. But, yeah, it comes with its own base. And I think for a number of years, people have heard push fit, they've heard monopose, and they've kind of freaked out about it. But the reality is that the models we get that are like quote unquote multipose, they're basically monopose. Like the amazing neophyte hybrids that everyone's using, the gene stealer neophyte hybrids everyone's using to convert everything, unless you use the right arms, they don't go together properly. So that's kind of like a monopose on the arms. You can move the heads and stuff. But yeah, this Space Marine, it kind of like push fits together. It kind of monoposes, but it looks amazing. And something that you noted when I showed you the sprue is that the head is actually articulated. That instead of being like just like a nub that you glue into a body, it's a pin that goes through a hole in the neck with another kind of thing on the bottom end. So you conceivably could model the Marine to have the head be turnable.
You could assemble it, paint it, and the head could rotate left and right.
Yeah.
You could have one point of articulation on your Space Marine.
Woo!
Back to the monopose thing. 5 years ago, I was like, you know what? Every army should just have one kit that's like a monopose kit. That it's snap fit, monopose. It doesn't matter what it looks like, as long as it's like every single army is like, kid walks into a store, we made it really simple, everybody's in the same pose, but this is going to be your first kit, it's going to be easy to paint. And at that time, there were, like, I think maybe five armies had push-fit monopose kits that were basically from the starter set. You got the Chaos one, the Dark Angels, there was the Space Marine from Battle from Makarj, and there were the Tyranids, and I
Gaunts.
Think... The Gaunts, sorry. The
Termagaunts from Battle for Makarj.
Yeah. Were the Overkill Gene Stealers push-fit?
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, their arms, like, push-fitted into the sides of their body. And their head was attached. This is the thing, though. This is what I'm trying to say, that push-fit monopose has become a very different thing. Like, we're not talking about, what was it, Dark Vengeance, where you got those Chaos Space Marines where if you look at them from one angle, it's like, oh, dude, this is awesome. And you turn them slightly to the other side. You see that all of their front details have been kind of, like, extruded into their body.
Yeah, it's for the this mold, not... so there's no undercuts. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's not what we're dealing with now. Like, when you get monopose push fit, like, they're crazy. Like, so the thing, we were talking about this and we've gotten off topic, but there was that sheet, and they pulled the sheet off the table, and under the sheet was all of our individual copies of Dark Imperium, all of our individual indexes. And when I opened up that Dark Imperium box and I looked at the Chaos Marines on their sprue, the Death Guard, I couldn't believe it. Like, I actually looked at them and I'm like, I'm going to need to look at some instructions to see how these go together, because the whole, like, push fit monopose, it's so complicated. Like, it's so detailed.
It's not
just like slap a bolter on the front of this guy. It's like put that leg, one leg in with this arm, and like, they're accomplishing really amazing stuff with the technology. What I want to say is that it's not a dirty word anymore. Like, monopose and push fit are not a dirty word anymore.
So when you got the boxes, did everyone first go straight to the rules and look at the rules, or did everyone open up and start, like, playing around with the models first?
I think a bunch of them were looking primarily at the index books, or they started looking at the rules. But it was kind of confusing because we got the boxes, we opened them up, and then they were like, oh, let's play a game now. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to play a game. I just want to look at the models. And they're like, oh, but you brought your... They asked us to bring our miniatures down, and it was really cool. They had created a scenario for us, and they had pit, like, the three Imperial players who won versus the two Xenos players plus a Xenos player from the studio on the other side to play this mission with our models. And the whole point of it was so that they could show us how new 40K worked.
Nice.
And kind of, like, guide us through it. So they kind of, like, took us to that right after they'd given us the boxes. And because I don't play as much, I'm like, I kind of want to just look at the models. But I'm a lame-o. So it was really cool. Yeah. So from that, we went and played the game. They had asked us what we were going to be bringing, and they'd actually like photocopied the pages from the indexes so we could just have them there.
Right.
And they'd tallied up our power values so that they could see which side was kind of the underdog. Xenos was the underdog, so we chose to go first. And yeah, it went from there. The one thing that scared the crap out of me was when we were deploying, because the rules have changed slightly for Gene Stealer Cult. I only got one roll on the cult deployment table. I didn't get to re-roll it because I didn't have any Primuses kicking around. And I also realized for the first time that Return to the Shadows is gone.
Oh, yeah.
You can't Return to the Shadows of Gene Stealers anymore, which is probably good because that was a bit beardy and that made them super mobile. But it kind of sucks, too.
Everybody has that in every army. Something dropped. It kind of sucks. If you play the army for a year and it's really still lacking, I'm sure they're going to update it and be like, okay, let's add this part in. The only thing I want to say about new 40K that I love is that I was very adamant that I needed to have a specialty Blood Angel Tech Marine that could be equipped with a jump pack. And, like, I have this model that I made that I love. He's a Tech Marine with a jump pack with a chainsword and a bolt pistol. And I can make that model. It's still cheap as chips. I'm so bloody happy. Anyways.
Oh, good.
Can we talk about the game?
Yeah, the game was pretty good. The cool thing was that they told us that the best way to approach new 40K is pretend you don't know anything.
Yeah.
Because there was a number of situations where I tried to, like, do something like I would in 7th edition 40K. Like, deploying my character with my unit. It's like, no, yeah. You don't deploy them with the unit, but they can deploy near each other.
Yeah.
As one. And, like, other weird stuff like that. And they basically said, like, forget everything you know. Learn it again. So it was very good because Don and Travis acted as our guides. So they like took us through turn by turn and they guided us through what we were doing. So we had to, the mission was this beautiful table that Pete had put together, like absolutely stunning, crazy
city table.
I got some, yeah.
Okay.
I got pictures of our game, but they're not like amazing pictures. So we were fighting across this table and we had to capture these five objectives. They were the Imperial shipping containers.
Yep.
So whoever had the most objectives at the end of the game was the winner. So hilarity ensued. I had my 5-man squad of Gene Slayers completely vaped by a squad of God Vanguard or something. Mm. So they got obliterated. And it was a very brief game because we were kind of like doing other stuff while we were doing it. I think we only got through like 2 or 3 turns. But in the end, the Xenos won. Which is awesome because we were occupying more objectives than the Imperial players. And then they're like, and one more thing, guys. And they're like, why don't you go and flip over those objectives you were trying to capture? So we flipped over the objectives, and each of the five objectives had our initials on it.
Nice.
Or one of our initials on it. And they had painted the hatches to kind of be similar to the paint schemes for our army. So they're like, and those are yours to keep. So it was one more cool little, like, keepsake.
What was it? Like a token or like an escape hatch?
It was the Imperial shipping container things.
Oh, cool.
So they painted 5 of those and each one of us got to take one home.
Did you realize that like, oh, that shipping container looks like my army or no?
No. Mine, like, it was just, it had like Dark Angel green hatches.
Oh, okay. So to go with the model they gave you.
But it was cool because it had my initials on the bottom of it.
Nice.
Yeah. And because like we didn't. As soon as they're like, one more thing, I'm like, oh, Jesus, did they, like, put our name somewhere on this board? So I was, like, looking around to be, like, if there's little posters or something. But, no, it was that they had made these objectives for us. So that was really sweet.
Nice.
It was cool. I turned over Jake's objective, and Jake, like, turned over my objective. And, like, all his guys were sitting on my objective. And I'm like, Jake, here's yours. He's like, here's yours, Nick. And oh. Anyway, so that was really cute.
Did you find that the game was more killy?
Oh, so much more killy.
Okay.
Very killy. Super killy. We didn't even get into combat. I was hoping to get combat be killed. Well, I did get into combat. But yeah. Very killy. Cool. I like the fact that Marines now have to take saves and worry about it because they're save modifiers.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I noticed was that everything you need to know is on your data cards.
Yep. That's cool. Which we were doing already, right? Kind of.
Yeah, you were doing. You were putting those together. That was awesome.
Anyways, okay, so you had your game. What was after the game?
Well, they took us out for lunch at a place called The Ranch, and nice. I had missed the whole, like, barbecue on the Friday night thing because I got in so late, so I had this barbecue lunch, and it was friggin' to die for. It was beef brisket with this fingerling potato, warm potato salad, a biscuit, which blew my mind, and nice. Like pickles and this kind of coleslaw. Got some nice Texan beer. Josh convinced me to order the Texas poutine. I was like, really? I'm from Canada. I'm not ordering poutine in Texas. He's like, trust me. So I got it. It was pretty good. It was like the Japanese version of poutine. It had a fried egg on top. So I shared that with Anton, and it was tasty. Oh, and Desiree ordered these weird fried green tomatoes that I'd never tried before, but that was interesting. So yeah, we did that, and that was another opportunity. Josh was, again, allowing us to ask all kinds of questions, and like I sat beside him, so I was like kind of pestering him a bit, but it was cool.
You guys are asking very sensitive questions, but you are in a public location.
They're not sensitive. They're sensitive questions to Warhammer nerds, but people who don't know anything about Games Workshop wouldn't know anything about them. Like, I'm asking about Shadow War. The next person's going to be like, what? What the fuck is Shadow War?
But, like, if there was a well-placed spy at that restaurant, he would have...
If there was a well-placed spy at the ranch on Saturday, they would have heard some things, yes. But, like, Josh is, like, he's a good guy. Like, he can't tell us things.
Yeah, right.
Like, he would, like...
Lose his job.
Yeah, he can't tell us anything significant. He kind of, like, hinted at, like, the future direction of Games Workshop. But it's kind of stuff that you can extrapolate from, like, what they're doing already.
Yep.
And, like, we asked him questions about, like, what happened with Shadow War? And he's like, well, there's been a lot of talk on the internet. I'm going to tell you what actually happened with Shadow War. Like, why were there not enough boxes and stuff like that?
Right.
And he was very forthright. It was amazing.
Why were there not enough boxes of terrain?
Because terrain doesn't sell. Terrain has never sold. And they said that there was this kind of situation where nobody ever buys terrain, nobody ever buys terrain, nobody ever buys terrain. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to try and make some cool terrain. But it probably won't sell because terrain never sells. And then they kind of like previewed it and there was this huge demand for it. And people were like, oh shit, I think this is going to be big. And it was literally a victim of its own success that they had no idea it was going to be that popular, which people have like postulated, but that was definitely it. The thing he told me that was really interesting is that because they had assumed that this stuff wasn't going to sell, the terrain, the whole idea of putting rules in the box was like an afterthought. It's like, we have this cool terrain, we're going to try and sell it. We have the Necromunda rules, let's like combine that with new 40K and make something, and then give someone like a cool game that they can play with this terrain, but whatever. People probably won't use it, they'll probably just buy it for the terrain, who cares? And it was kind of a surprise how successful the rules were and how much people love playing Shadow War. And the other thing he said was that the PDFs for the other factions were almost an afterthought. That the idea was just to have the orcs and the marines.
So, you guys had lunch. You guys asked some questions.
Yeah.
Then after lunch, what happened?
After lunch, we were taken back to HQ, and that was when they interviewed all of us about our armies. So
okay.
We sat down with Travis and, God, I hope his name is Lan. I think his name is Lan. Travis and Lan, and they asked us about our like history in the hobby. They asked us about our armies, and they kind of like did. It was all on video, so it's going to be going up on the Inner Circle Facebook page.
Okay.
And it was really cool. Like it felt really good to be kind of like interviewed and be able to talk about our projects. And then while that was happening, anyone who wasn't getting interviewed was given hobby time, so
nice.
They're like, hey, you guys want to play another game? You want to like mess around with the primary space marines that we gave you? You want to like look at your index books, look at your boxes, go for it. So we were just chilling. While the one thing that was happening while we were doing the interview, they told us that there was going to be like a secret thing in the morning, which was kind of like us getting to play around with new 40K.
Yep.
And the surprise that we got our own new 40K boxes. And then there was a secret thing in the evening, and it wasn't really clear what it was. They're like, oh, there's a secret thing right before you leave. And the secret thing right before we leave was that while
hand
we were
jobs.
In there having our interviews. What?
I didn't say hand jobs.
No hand jobs. No blow jobs. While we were in there having our interview with Travis, Don was also in there. And, like, I roll up, because my interview was last, and I roll up, and I'm like, and, like, Lan's there, and, like, Travis is there, and then Don's there. And Don's sitting there with this, like, big board in front of him and a marker. I'm like, what are you doing exactly? And they're like, surprise, Don's going to draw you while we interview you. Because, like, Don's, like, a caricature artist.
Okay.
So Don drew each of us as a member of our Inner Circle army, and they asked us what our arch nemesis is for our army. And then he drew like each one of us like with our arch like about to stab our arch nemesis or taking out our arch nemesis. So I didn't know who to say for an arch nemesis. I'm like, my brother has a Blood Angel army. He's like, all right, Blood Angels it is. So it's me as a Magus about to stab you as a Blood Angel.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was a cool surprise.
Oh, hobby time. So I was wondering, while you guys are doing hobby time, were any of you guys kind of like cutting and trading little bloat flies that are like flying above the hook?
Oh my God, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Bloody Wilbur's going to kill me. I should have done that. Oh my God, I should have done that. Because those guys probably don't all care about Death Guard. We should have traded.
Yeah.
We didn't even think to do that. Why did we not think to do that?
It's kind of like selfish also to be like, I'm at Games Workshop. They gave me this thing. Here, I'll give you these. I don't want these. I want those.
I could have stolen so many bloat flies for Wilbur.
Wait, you want bloat flies or you want to give him?
I'm sending them all to Wilbur. He's okay. He's a dude that I met on Twitter. He's this cool dude who does orcs and Death Guard. And I kind of made a joke with the Wire brothers in their Dragon into Turbolasers podcast that I was on last week, that we were reviewing the box contents of Dark Imperium, and I love it all except for the Nurgle Sorcerer, and I can't stand it. And I said that I was going to literally put him in a box and just send him straight to Wilbur, because I know Wilbur will do something amazing with him because he's really good at Nurgle conversions. But I should have gotten him he loves the fucking flies, the weird little flies on people's shoulders.
Yeah.
I should have clipped everyone's flies and put them in a box, my box, and given them. Oh my God, why didn't I think of that?
Anyways, the one thing about the Sorcerer, I was looking at his psychic powers. They're really cool psychic powers. That model, the face on it, I don't like. I wish he had a helmet.
God, it's so bad.
Other than that, it's so bad.
And it's like blowing a fart out of his mouth. It's so bad. And like, I felt really bad because when I was on Dragon into Turbolasers last week, we kind of like shat all over that model. Like, we looked at all the other Nurgle stuff. We're like, this is amazing. And when we shat on it, and then we were also talking about like Maxime from Le Blog de Cousas, which I really want to plug. If you've never been to Blog de Cousas, you got to go check it out. BLOG space DES space KOUZES. It's a bunch of really talented hobbyists all out of France. So it will be in French. If that freaks you out, don't be freaked out. Google will translate it for you. Yeah. So one of the hobbyists there is this guy named Maxime, who's a model designer for Games Workshop. He did an amazing Nurgle army years ago called like Plague Bones. And you can see that in the models in the Dark Imperium box, a lot of the stuff has been taken from his army. For example, the Lord with the crazy axe with the three saw blades in it, that's straight off of Maxime's, God, what's it called, Lord of Skulls. So a lot of the stuff in the box is his. I was really worried that the Sorcerer would have been done by him, but he just posted something on his blog detailing the models he designed. Unfortunately, he did not design the Sorcerer. That was Ali Morrison or whatever. So we can continue to shit on it.
What is it called? The flyer that comes with it, or the little Nurgle?
Blight plague. Just call it a blight drone. Yeah, the flyer thing. A putrid blight drone or something. Or a pubescent? Pubescent? No.
Ew. Blog de Cazuz, he made a blight drone for his Nurgle army that had that, like, it had the three kind of propellers on it. It looked more like a submarine.
Oh, the big one. Okay, yeah, the big one.
Yeah, I think he brought this three circles, that's the Nurgle theme element to them. That's really, really beyond what you'd expect from just like, oh, Warhammer army. The axe has those three little blades. The blight thing has three propellers.
I hadn't thought about that. You're right.
Okay. I want to know, though, what are your plans for the contents of the box?
I think I'm finally going to do Alpha Legion. I've been talking about it for a long time. So I'm going to use the Primaris Marines just as normal Chaos Marines, because there's a part in the Alpha Legion fluff that they're supposed to be taller than normal Marines. Adam Wire's been working on a True Scale Marine for a while, like since before Primaris was announced, and he's promised me one or two of them when he finally finishes them. So I want to get those guys and use them as like squad leaders for Alpha Legion based on Primaris. And because Maxime did such a fucking amazing job on the Death Guard, I now have to ally some Death Guard with my Alpha Legion.
So, two things. The three jump pack guys. You don't want those, do you?
If you want them that bad, I'll give them to you. Because I'm not a huge fan of them. The jump packs are beautiful. I don't love their weird feet, but their armor is pretty cool. And their big bolters are weird.
If you were doing a Horus Heresy army, they could be. You could get two more and make them into a special jump pack troop that have two guns. Destroyers. And then my second question is, with the Nurgle, I thought you should take them. You could make more Galvor back out of them, I think.
Maybe, but they're so good that I don't really want to. I honestly feel like I'd be shitting on Maxime's work if I modified them, because he's done such a good job with them. Like, there's a couple of them that I would swap up a bit. Like, I don't love the Power Fist on the Sergeant or whatever for the Plague Marine, so I'm going to probably replace that with a Plasma Pistol off one of the other guys.
You should replace it with bits from the Galvor back that you have.
I could do. Or I could just make those Galvor back.
Oh, what about the zombies that come in? Does it come with one squad of 10 or two squads of 10?
I think it comes with two. I was looking at the sprues, and it looks like they double up, which is weird, because it looks like it also makes one of the Plague Marines double up, at least. But we'll see. I like the cultists. I don't love them. There's some weird stuff about them, but I think it can fix it. I don't love their faces. So I'll probably chop all those off and put them in a box and send them to Wilbur, and then I'll make my own faces for them. But there's one cultist that has, like, a cool knife, but he's got this weird, like, soda can stuck to his side, and I have no idea why he's got a soda can stuck to his side. So that's got to go. But I really like the guy in the lab coat.
Okay, so you're going to be starting a Chaos Army. Do you have any demonettes?
You know I have a shitload of demonettes. We like, bought out the shop when they went on the direct order. I'm probably not going to use them for this army. I have a crazy idea of making the Queen of Blades from StarCraft, or Brood War, and making her out of Ilariel, the Sylvaneth character. And then I wanted to make her as a patriarch, or I guess she would be a matriarch, and then make the... this was back when there was the first curse, where you could take her with 20... or you could take your patriarch with 20 gene sealers. I wanted to make the Queen of Blades and then make her own gene sealers out of demonettes.
How many do you have?
20.
I have 10.
No, you have 20. You have another 10 here.
So you got me 20 demonettes for my birthday, but you only sent me 10, and then never mentioned there were 10 more waiting halfway across the world. Okay. Anyways, it's getting late. I think it's about time we cut now, and we'll push everything to the next episode.
Okay, with that, I guess we should end. Thank you for listening to this podcast about Games Workshop's Inner Circle competition. I had a lot of fun talking to Brother Pink this week about my experiences down in Dallas, and we're going to continue on with the same subject next week when we're going to hear from the different winners themselves. While I was down in Dallas, I managed to record some audio, run some quick interviews with them, and we wanted to share that this week, but the podcast was way too long. So we split it into two halves, and you can look forward to that next week. And I promise not to pull a George R. R. Martin and release it 5 years from now. If you wanted to leave any comments or any suggestions for future episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at Xenos Alchemist, or you could shoot him at Mr. Pink on Twitter at MOD_SYNTH, that's at MOD_synth. Or another good place to leave comments is on the blog post about this podcast on the Modern Synthesis website, which is at modernsynthesist.com.
State of military emergency was declared on Tenebra. All able-bodied men were rounded up and inducted into the Planetary Defense Force. The planetary government only told us that some unspecified Xenos fleet was within striking distance of the planet, and they wanted to prepare us in case of a planetary assault. We locals were posted to various cities and towns, but rumors told that Deptis Astartes were landing at the polar base to bolster the planet's defenses. The Xenos forces descended on the planet a little over a week after the first warning was issued. Strangely, their assault focused solely on the northern complex, which had been bordered off from the rest of the planet as far back as anyone could remember. The massive polar fortress itself was staffed entirely by Imperial forces from off-planet, but those who lived just outside the polar border told about the Xenos landing craft blackened the sky. Very little could be seen over the fortifications that encircled the northern zone. Those living in the northern zone provided scarce reports of the Xenos craft that descended on the fortress. They said they were bulbous, organic behemoths. The battle beyond the fortification raged for nearly 2 weeks, but never once did any conscripted soldiers catch a glimpse of the Xenos forces. On the final day, those stationed around the polar border reported seeing all manner of Imperial landing craft leaving the surface for ships in orbit. Once the final ship had cleared the lower atmosphere, sirens began to howl behind the crushed great walls. Trails of fire arced down from the heavens and impacted with whatever lay within the barricades, the explosions sending tremors through the mantle of Tenebra 3. More orbital ordnance rained down on the fortress for what felt like hours. Many wondered if the Imperial fleet meant to destroy the entire planet with such a salvo. Finally, the assault ended. followed by silence and two Imperial aircraft that streaked over the site. The rains came on the heels of the aircraft and poured down on what remained of the fortress long into the night. None of the Imperial forces who fled the planet ever returned. As I said, all this happened 10 years ago. Believing the threat dispatched, the planetary government disbanded the PDF. Most people nearly forgot about the whole thing. Until the first reports of strange creatures living deep within the northern forests. The things were always spotted from a distance and fled when anyone tried to approach them. Then, sometime in the winter about 5 years back, the things stopped spooking when approached. They turned aggressive and attacked the border towns at night, slaughtering and dragging away animals, sometimes people. The attacks started near the polar border, but slowly began happening further and further south. The creatures always strike from the woods and retreat north. Although these things were obviously alien in origin, they didn't appear to be much larger than our common canine species. If enough armed resistance was mustered by locals, these attacks could be driven off. The attacks escalated and were accompanied by larger, far more deadly creatures that moved through the shadows, only striking at key moments to break defense lines. Peripheral northern settlements are all but gone now. The government stated no attacks have been reported since the populations have been moved south of the Temperate Circle. But I wonder if the government may be hiding something from the populace to avoid inciting panic.
This is not the end. No. This is not the end. This is not.